Well, I've reached Ian Sinclair's house now. It's located in a pleasant row of two-storey dark brick houses between a main road and a quiet square here in Hackney. Opposite is a primary school. You can possibly hear the high-pitched hubbub of the children inside. In his garden, out at the front of his house, he has a number of plants as well as one small tree. There is a white archway entrance, a mixture of square and arched windows, and I'm about to do what Ian Sinclair didn't manage to do when he went to visit J.G. Ballard, to actually go inside the writer's house.
Hi.
Hello, how do you do? Good to see you. How are
you? Good to see you.
Jamie Kumarasamy.
Yeah,
Ian Sinclair, I guess I'm doing what you didn't actually do when you went to meet J.G. Ballard, sitting in your house. Tell us about when you went your own pilgrimage to Shepperton.
I arrived outside his house in the twilight and was wondering if it was the right house when a character with a shaven head came stomping down the street and said, oh, a famous writer used to live there. He couldn't remember his name and he'd never met him, but he knew that he was famous because he'd been on television. And I looked at the house and it was a great period survival. It had the crittle windows and there was a plant that was overwhelming the front room now in its fecundity. And the Ford car was sinking slightly on its wheels in the driveway. And the lawn was well kept, but it had a, as if the house itself had a real presence, you know, and a sense of something missing because he wasn't there anymore. He was ill and he'd moved into West London.
And what role did the house play in his writing?
I think the house was the great incubating force field of his writing. It suited him beautifully to move out in the 1960s to escape, in a sense, from the city, which he never really liked. He didn't like the buildings, the classical buildings of London, and he much preferred this hinterland of retail parks and marinas and motorways and all of the things that fed his fiction. So being at that distance from London gave him a kind of privilege and took him out of what he thought of as the literary mainstream of cocktail parties and so on, and threw him into this other world which he found in its normalcy completely surreal and strange. Because he thought the two great factors of modern life were boredom and terror, and the Shepperton kind of incubated both. It gave him the necessary boredom in which to work, and it hinted at sort of millennial and apocalyptic terrors coming over the horizon.
Well, here we sit in your house in part of London, which is obviously intrinsic to your writing. What about this house? What role does it play for you? Do you reflect on that when you think of J.G. Ballard and his house?
Yeah, I feel my own house, in a sense, is a pale copy of what his is. I mean, mine works in the opposite way, because mine is a complete inner city house. And yet we've lived here all our lives, essentially, since 1968. I've sat in the same house. So it's become, in the same way as the Ballard house, the ground of my own writing. I've never written anything anywhere else. I've never absorbed anything but the landscape around here. It wasn't something I set out to do, but somehow I felt my sense of London as being a labyrinth, as being an enclosed and intense area, is very different to the Ballard sense, which I look to with kind of great respect, sitting out on the edges of things and saying endlessly that he regarded London as a suburb of Heathrow rather than the other way around. He was much more interested in the airports and the reservoirs and all of that than he was in the life of the city, because the life of the city is people and collisions and all those things which he wasn't too keen on.